Chapter 38. The End of Time. No one ever did find out who the members of the Chronoguard Star Chamber were, nor what their relationship with the Goliath Corporation actually was. But it was noted that some investment opportunities taken by the multinational were so fortuitous and so prudent and so long-sighted that they seemed statistically impossible. There were never any whistleblowers, so the extent of any corruption was never known, nor ever would be. By the time I arrived back home, it was dark. Landon heard my key in the latch and met me in the hallway to give me a long hug, which I gratefully received and returned. "What's the news on the reality book show?"
"Cancelled. Vanderpost has been on the TV and radio explaining that due to a technical error, the project has been shelved, and that the stupidity surplus would be discharged instead by reinvigorating the astronomically expensive and questionably useful anti-smite shield."
"And Pride and Prejudice?"
"Running exactly as it ever did. And here's the good bit. All the readers who bought copies of the book to see the Bennets dress up as bees continued reading to see if Lizzie and Jane would get their men and if Lydia would come to a sticky end. Naturally, all the new readers were delighted at what happened. So much so that people with the name of Wickham have had to go into hiding."
"Just like the old days," I said with a smile. The passion for books was returning. I thought for a moment and walked over to the bookcase, pulled out my copy of the Great Samuel Pepys Fiasco, and riffled through the pages. They were blank. Every single one. "How are Friday and the girls?" I asked, dropping the book into the waste paper basket.
"Friday is out. The girls are in bed."
"And Pickwick?"
"Still bald and a bit dopey. So, you managed to do what you set out to do?"
"Yes," I said quietly. "And Land, I can't lie to you any more. The Acme carpet stuff is just a front."
"I know," he said softly. "You still do all that spec ops work, don't you?"
"Yes, but Land, that's a front too." He placed a hand on my cheek and stared into my eyes.
"I know about jurisfiction as well, Thurs."
I frowned. I hadn't expected this. "You knew? Since when?"
"Since about 3 days after you'd said you'd given it up."
I stared at him. "You knew I was lying to you all those years?"
"Pumpkin," he said,
as he gently ushered me into the house and closed the door behind us.
"You do love me, don't you?"
"Yes, but..." He put his finger to my lips.
"Hang on a minute. I know you do, and I love it that you do. But if you care too much about upsetting me, then you won't do the things you have to do, and those things are important. Not just to me, but to everyone."
"Then you're not cross? I've been lying to you for 14 years.
"Thursday, you mean everything to me. Not just because you're cute, smart, funny, and have a devastatingly good figure and boobs to die for, but that you do right for right's sake. It's what you are and what you do. Even if I never get my magnum opus published, I will still die secure in the knowledge that my time on this planet was well spent, giving support, love, and security to someone who actually makes a difference."
"Oh, Land," I said, burying my head in his shoulder. "You're making me go all misty." And I hugged him again, while he rubbed my back and said that everything was all right. We stood like this for some time, until I suddenly had a thought. "Land," I said slowly, "how much do you know?"
"Mr. and Mrs. Bradshaw tell me quite a lot, and Spike and Bowden often call to keep me updated."
"The rotten swines," I said with a smile. "They're always telling me to spill the beans to you."
"We all care about you, Thursday."
This was abundantly true. but I couldn't get Thursday 1 through 4 and her brief sojourn to the real world out of my mind. What about other stuff? Landon knew exactly what I was talking about.
I only figured out she was written Thursday when you came back upstairs.
How?
Because it was only then I realized she hadn't been wearing the necklace I gave you for your birthday.
Oh, I said, fingering the locket around my neck. There was silence for a moment as we both considered what had happened. Eventually, I said, But she was a terrible lay, right?
Hopeless.
And we both laughed. We would never mention it again.
Listen, said Landon. There's someone to see you in the front room.
Who?
Just go in. I'll make some tea.
I walked into the living room, where a tall man was standing at the mantel with his back to me, looking at the framed pictures of the family. That's us holidaying on the Isle of Skye, I said in a soft voice, at the Old Man of Store. Jenny's not there because she was in a huff and sat in the car, and you can just see Pickwick's head at the edge of the frame.
I remember it well, he said, and turned to face me.
It was Friday, of course. Not my Friday, but his older self. He was about 60, and handsome to boot. His hair was greying at the temples, and the smile wrinkles around his eyes made me think of Landon. He was wearing the pale blue uniform of the Chrono Guard, the shoulder emblazoned with the 5 gold pips of Director General. But it wasn't the day-to-day uniform. It was ceremonial dress. This was a special occasion.
Hi, Mum.
Hi, Sweet Pea. So you did make it to Director General after all? He shrugged and smiled.
I did, and I didn't. I'm here, but I can't be. It's like everything else that we've done in the past to change the present. We were definitely there, but we couldn't have been. The one thing you learn about the time business is that mutually opposing states can comfortably coexist.
Like Saturday Night Fever being excellent and crap at the same time.
Kind of. When it comes to travelling about in the time stream, paradox is always a cozy bedfellow. You get used to living with it.
He looked at his watch.
You destroyed the recipe, didn't you?
I ate it.
Good. I've just come to tell you that with only 23 minutes to go until the end of time, and without the equation for unscrambling eggs, the Star Chamber has conceded that the continued existence of time travel is retrospectively insupportable. We're closing down the time engines right now. All operatives are being demobilized. Enloopment facilities are being emptied, and places found for the inmates in conventional prisons.
She was right, after all, I said quietly.
I'm sorry?
Aornis, I did get her out of the loop.
We're making quite sure that all prisoners with special requirements are being looked after properly, Mum.
I hope so. What about the other inventions built using retro-deficit engineering?
They'll stay. The microchip and gravitube will be invented, so it's not a problem. But there won't be any new retro-deficit technologies. More important, the standard history event line will stay as it was when we switched off the engines.
None of the history rolling up like a carpet, then?
Possibly, but not very likely.
And Goliath gets to stay as it is?
I'm afraid so.
He paused briefly, then sighed.
So many things I could have done, might have done, and haven't done. I'm going to miss it all.
He looked at me intently. This was my son, but it wasn't. It was him as he might have turned out, but never would. I still loved him, but it was the only time in my life where I was glad to say goodbye.
What about the now? It'll recover, given time. Keep people reading books, Mum. It helps to reinforce and strengthen the indefinable moment that anchors us in the here and now. Strive for the long now. It's the only thing that will save us.
Well, he added with finality, giving me a kiss on the cheek.
I'll be going. I've got some paperwork before I switch off the last engine.
What will happen to you? He smiled again.
The Friday last? I wink out of existence. And you know, I'm not bothered. I've no idea what the future will bring to the Friday present. And that's a concept I'll gladly die for.
I felt tears come to my eyes, which was silly, really. This was only the possibility of Friday, not the actual one.
Don't cry, Mum. I'll see you when I get up tomorrow. And you know I'm going to sleep in, right?
He hugged me again, and in an instant he was gone. I wandered through to the kitchen and rested my hand on Landon's back as he poured some milk in my tea. We sat at the kitchen table until, untold trillions years in the future, time came to a halt. There was no erasure of history, no distant thunder, no "we interrupt this broadcast" on the wireless, nothing. The technology had gone for good, and the ChronoGuard with it. Strictly speaking, neither of them had ever been. But as our Friday pointed out the following day, they were still there, echoes from the past that would make themselves known as anachronisms in ancient texts and artifacts that were out of place and out of time. The most celebrated of these would be the discovery of a fossilized 1956 Volkswagen Beetle preserved in Precambrian rock strata. In the glove box, they would find the remains of the following day's paper featuring the car's discovery, and a very worthwhile tip for the winner of the 3:30 at Kempton Park. "Well, that's it," I said, after we had waited for another 5 minutes and found ourselves still in a state of pleasantly welcome existence. "The ChronoGuard has shut itself down, and time travel is as it should be. Technically, logically, and theoretically, impossible."
"Good thing, too," replied Landon. "It always made my head ache. In fact, I was thinking of doing a self-help book for science fiction novelists eager to write about time travel. It would consist of a single word. Don't."
I laughed, and we heard a key turn in the front door. It turned out to be Friday, and I recoiled in shock when he walked into the kitchen. He had short hair, and was wearing a suit and tie. As I stood there with my mouth open, he said,
"Good evening, Mother. Good evening, Father. I trust I am not too late for some sustenance."
"Oh, my God!" I cried in horror. "They replaced you!" Neither Landon nor Friday could hold it in for long, and they both collapsed into a sea of giggles. He hadn't been replaced at all. He'd just had a haircut. "Oh, very funny," I said, arms folded and severely unamused. "Next you'll be telling me Jenny is a mindworm or something."
"She is," said Landon.
And it was my turn to burst out laughing at the ridiculousness of the suggestion. They didn't find it at all funny. Honestly, some people have no sense of humour.